1201 Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Annis. Sportsnet today, as we normally do on a Saturday, 12 until 1. This sounds tropical. This music, I think there's a reason for it. Technical operator Derek Brandale. I mean, there's a double-edged sword here because it's also, horrible 80s music. Mike Wilner knows it well, I'm sure. Joins us on the line right now. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
It's tropical. You're all over the vacations. You're getting your money's worth this off-season, Mike.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm all over the vacations.
Well, Hawaii, and then you just got back from another one. Yeah, it's a couple.
Yeah, but I know how to find cheap vacations.
Yeah, good for you. I'm not ripping you. I'm saying congratulations. I'm envious. Good job.
It's a long season.
Yes, it
is. I wish that I had been able to make it to the fine state of the leadoff French fries that you attended.
Yes, I did. On Thursday, I was at the what is now called the leadoff. Used to be the state of the franchise or state of the French fries, depending on who you are. And I was kind of surprised, Mike. I thought it might be a little more awkward. And now I understand that the questions weren't going to be awkward because it's not like a live mic and they just don't open up the floor to questions. They've all been pre-approved and they put them on the big screen and whatever. But when they introduced Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, nice warm ovation. I thought that's what should happen. Now, don't get me wrong there, but I was kind of surprised. Don't hit your phone. I didn't think that would happen, but yeah, it was kind of warm for both of them.
Yeah, I read about that, heard a little bit about the whole thing, and I was kind of surprised too. I mean, I didn't expect there to be like pitchforks and torches or anything like that.
Yeah, but I thought mixed.
I thought there would be some people who were dissatisfied. There are a lot of people who have expressed to me that they think that Mark Shapiro is the devil. So. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as I try to convince them otherwise, I'm very surprised that the reaction was warm and pleasant, and I'm happy about that because, look, it's not their fault that they've been put into
nope.
this situation by any means, and Ken Rosenthal when we were at a pitch talks last week said he was really really surprised because he finds that. He thinks that Mark Shapiro and Alex Anthopoulos are two of the nicest people he's ever met in the game.
Yeah.
I think it's only fair to give Shapiro a shot, and we'll see.
And we assume that it's, Alex Anthopoulos couldn't get along with Mark Shapiro. And again, we're not going to spend too much time on this because we've been over this subject 100 times, it feels like, over the last few months. But maybe that was part of it. But maybe part of it was that, this was not great for Alex's health as much as the payoff was great for him. Like, we saw the weight go up and down. It was extremely stressful. He's got a young family. And certainly, when you get to that level, I assume you want to stay there and there's some drive to be in charge of a team. But I'm sure the his life quality might be a little better living in Los Angeles all year and not being the guy, Mike.
Yeah, I think he would have been very, very happy to continue being in Toronto and being the guy.
Yeah.
He'll be part of a bigger brain trust now, working with people that he really likes and that he wants to learn from. We did see the weight go up and down. It's a stressful job. There's no question about that. We see the weight go up and down with a lot of people, stress or otherwise.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he would have been very, very happy to continue with the stress and running the team.
Yeah, okay, so we're done with that. So now the attention focuses to contracts and the situations now with Jesse Chavez. Okay, that's secondary, and they'll go to an arbitration hearing, and nobody really cares. Because nobody really cares if Jesse Chavez is upset about what he's being paid or the fact that the Blue Jays are squabbling over $400,000 with him. People are obviously looking at the case in front of the Blue Jays with the reigning American League MVP, Josh Donaldson, and wondering how that's going to break down. And we asked questions of Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins about that at the leadoff, and they are still working towards a multi-year extension. Whether they can get something done that buys out some of Josh Donaldson's free agent years. I mean, I find that one hard to believe, and it seems like they will be hard and fast as far as being a file and trial team where they're going to go to arbitration with Josh Donaldson. And I don't see anything changing there, Mike, from what you've read. I mean, does that seem like the likely scenario to you as well?
I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to imagine them buying out a year of Josh Donaldson's free agency. That's for sure. I can't imagine that they would find a number that would work for both of them, where, you know, Donaldson is comfortable assuming the risk.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much better for him to go year to year. But maybe they can do a two-year thing that at least saves them a little bit of face. And then he'll still have 1 year of arbitration left at the end of it, but they won't have to go to arbitration because it really does seem to be a thing this time. I don't quite understand why, but I also don't understand why they're holding so fast to the file and trial thing.
Yeah.
When Mark Shapiro, or I don't know if it was Shapiro or Atkins, one of them said, we're still a file and trial team this year. I think it was Shapiro who said it. But then we'll look into it in the future to see if we're going to remain that way. Well, if you're going to do that, then, you know, just give the MVP his money and be done with it. And you can say, okay, well, if you win an MVP, we're not file and trial. But if you don't, then we are. You know, you can get around that if you want to. I'm not so worried about the whole feather ruffling thing as other people seem to be, but
yeah.
It really does seem like there's an easy fix if you want it.
Yeah, I thought so too, and I asked that specific question. Are you guys still a file and trial team? Like the only deal you do with Josh Donaldson is a multi-year one that you can't. And I didn't get a really straight answer, so maybe things have changed, but yeah, it does seem like if it's a one-year deal, it's going to come through arbitration. Either way, I mean, Josh Donaldson will get his money. I get it. It's fine. And he's not going anywhere. It's going to be a Blue Jay for the next 3 years, no matter what. Jose Bautista. Yeah. Well, yeah. Barring something weird.
There are scenarios in which he's not.
Well, yeah. Well, you mean if he's traded or whatever. Yeah. Of course.
Well, that's about it.
Yeah, that's about it. Or, you know, he retires. You know,
right.
Maybe wants to be an astronaut.
Yeah,
it's a little late for that, though, I think. Okay.
I don't think you can go to space camp in the winter, so yeah, he would have to.
Yeah.
At least take a year off if he was going to be an astronaut.
So he'll be a Blue Jay barring something crazy for the next 3 years. I think it's like almost barring something crazy. Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion are not going to be the Blue Jays as soon as 2017 when this season's up. Barring a real... I don't know. Do you need a significant increase in payroll? Where does the payroll have to be to make sense to fit one or two of those guys in at $20 million per for, you know, 4 or 5 years, Mike?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know if it has to be 150 or if it has to be 180. It shouldn't have to be 180, but you've got Josh Donaldson who's going to be making 20 or more. You've got Troy Tulowitzki who's going to be making 20. So there's money that's has to be paid out and significant money to very few people. If you add Bautista and Edwin to that, you know, next year you're looking at four guys for somewhere between $80 and $90 million, and then you got to fit another 21 around them. It's not that easy to slam everybody in there. So the payroll is going to have to go up, I think, in order to afford to bring them both back. I do like what I'm hearing from Shapiro and Atkins.
Yep.
Seems as though, you know, the more they've gotten to know them, the more they understand what they mean and who they are and all that stuff. And hopefully ownership does the same thing, because ownership is going to have to intervene and say, look, we want you to keep these guys. If you can sign them for a reasonable price that's at the market, you know, if it's not stupid and then bring them back, then yeah. But I think that the Blue Jays have to win this year in order for that to happen. Not necessarily win the World Series, but get back to the playoffs and have those numbers stay up and the TV numbers as well and the whole kind of Blue Jay fever that captured the whole country from August to October, that's got to maintain. in order for them to make the kind of financial commitment it will take to bring the two of them back.
I don't want to get
bogged. I've gone from, like, I don't know, I thought there was maybe a 10% chance that they both come back to now a little bit more than that, and it's trending upward.
And Jose Bautista now coming out with some quotes in the, I guess it was the Canadian Press, about wanting to be a Blue Jay for the rest of his career, which is nice. And, I mean, you'd have a tough time imagining him saying anything to the contrary, but he did say it.
It's his best negotiating position.
Absolutely, 100%. Right? And I don't want to talk too much about 2017 because there's a lot of excitement and reasonably so for 2016. This team can win a World Series this year, but it's hard not to look forward to 2017 when you have these big question marks surrounding the two biggest pieces of an offense that is this team's biggest strength. It's almost like you're forced to re-sign those guys if you want to compete. Now, I know the cupboard's not totally bare if they're gone, right? Like, you still have Josh Donaldson, and you still have Troy Tulowitzki, and you still have Russell Martin, and you still got Marcus Stroman. But as far as the minor league depth, there's not a ton there. And who knows, maybe Anthony Alford is there. But the Blue Jays have kind of painted themselves into a corner here with the trading away of so many young assets. And again, it's hard to knock that, considering where it got them last year. But if you don't re-sign those guys, this team is so built around offense. I wonder where it does go in 2017, Mike. Not that this team should be headed for a rebuild or anything, but I mean, that's a significant part of what makes this team go, those two big bats in the middle of the lineup.
It is a significant part, but like you said, you know, if they leave, and again, talking too much about 2017 before the first pitch of 2016.
It's the last thing. Yeah, we'll move on after this.
Yeah,
but
it's a dangerous thing because, and I've said this many, many times, that, you know, if you're so worried about the forest, you're going to miss a lot of pretty trees. And 2016 is going to be a spectacular year, you would think, for the Blue Jays. So I'm sure that on the first Jays talk of the year, there'll be multiple calls about Bautista and Edwin and will they come back. And I'm going to spend most of the year telling people to just watch what's happening on the field right now and don't worry about it. But the truth is, if they both go, you still have Tulowitzki and Donaldson, who are a big two, and you know, as good a 1-2 punch as any in the game, I would think. And that's something to build around. You still have a phenomenal defense. You've got Stroman and Sanchez and Estrada and Happ next year. You'll have to build the bullpen, but you know, you've got Kevin Pillar. The cupboard isn't bare. You're right, it's not overflowing, but it doesn't have to be overflowing by any means. And you know, to have a good major league team, you're not looking to add anything but to replace those two guys. And yeah, they're really, really good, but you're replacing a DH and you're replacing a right fielder. And you have still a middle of the order that, you know, even a 1-2-3, maybe of Devin Travis with Tulowitzki and Donaldson. Anthony Alford looks like he's going to be something. Dalton Pompey has a very nice future ahead of him, one would think. I just think that there's this idea that you have to have one of the best farm systems in the major leagues, otherwise you're screwed. And it's just so not true. Your minor leagues exist to feed your major league team, and whether it's feeding them by graduating prospects or by trading them, it's still feeding them.
So let's talk about 2016, Mike, because that's going to be a whole lot of fun. And it's fast approaching. I can't wait.
It is 2016 already.
No, 2016 is here, but I think we all understand that I meant the 2016 Major League Baseball season.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. February 21st, pitchers and catchers report. First workout 22nd, and then rest of the squad shortly thereafter. So Blue Jays adding a little bit of depth. Now, we know the David Aardsma things. It's a minor league deal with an invite to spring training. They finally get their man, Gavin Floyd, after many years of speculation. And details have not been finalized there. I saw a report that it was a major league deal, which would be surprising. Don't you think, Mike?
I do. And I saw more reports that it was a minor league deal, which is what I tend to believe. But Gavin Floyd did some good stuff for the Cleveland Indians last year, and he was sort of, I don't know what's happening with this. That was weird. he's he sort of, I don't know, made a name for himself is the right thing, but he was a great story for the Indians, coming back from injury and pitching in September after breaking his elbow at the beginning of the season. So he won a lot of fans with the Indians in Cleveland and I guess in the front office too. And he's another guy who has some big league experience who can start in Buffalo along with the Brad Kennys of the world and help if they need help. But, you know, right now he's, what, the 10th, 11th starter on the Blue Jays. So he's a big league arm with big league experience who's Buffalo depth. And if you need him, you really hope you don't need him.
Yeah.
But if you need him, you're not afraid to throw him in there for a start of three.
Is there not a danger of, like, one of these, yeah, these major league retreads really having a great spring? And we know, oh, God, I hope we know to not take these spring training results too seriously. But is there not a chance of, like, Gavin Floyd looking spectacular? Boy, he looks like the old Gavin Floyd with the White Sox. That guy's a nice little steady arm in that rotation. And the Blue Jays breaking camp with him in the rotation if all things are being equal. And then Aaron Sanchez into the bullpen. And, boy, that bullpen now is pretty scary with Sanchez back in there and Drew Storen and Roberto Osuna. That's a big 1-2-3 at the back end, just like the, well, not quite like what the Yankees have, but along the same lines. Is there not a danger of that? Or all things being equal, do you think, because you, it's so much easier to go Aaron Sanchez, try him out as a starter, all right, fails, back to the bullpen, than the other way around, because the other way around is not happening. Is there any scenario where you see one of those major league retreads making this rotation?
Sure, any scenario, absolutely. Somebody gets hurt, you know.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That's not what I'm
saying. Not usual to come through spring training with your five guys all healthy. But I think the plan certainly is to have it be Stroman, Dickey, Estrada, Happ, Sanchez in the starting rotation. Because you're right. You can't start Sanchez in the bullpen and then put him back in the rotation if things don't go well. There's always the temptation, you know, to look at a Gavin Floyd or a Brad Penny or a Fausto Carmona, Roberto Hernandez and say, you know, he looks like his old self and maybe he can help and contribute to a big league team. And wouldn't it be great to have Sanchez in the bullpen? You didn't mention Brett Cecil, by the way, who didn't give up a run after Father's
right.
Day.
Yep.
You know, that would be a huge lure to the Jays. That temptation does exist. But I think these guys are smart enough to understand what they have, what they might have in Sanchez, and how I'd rather give Aaron Sanchez six starts to see if it's real than give Gavin Floyd, Roberto Hernandez, or Brad Penny six starts to see if it's real.
There's now all this, like the Buffalo rotation headed into this offseason was like non-existent. I'm pretty sure they had zero starters going into this offseason. They had zero starters. Now it's not so bad, Mike. Like, if you're forced into it, and you will be, no question, this team's going to need at least 7, 8, 9, maybe 10 starters this season. Like, it's, you're not, I mean, you're probably still not happy, but you're not hating life if you have to call on, and somebody will have a nice season in AAA, you would think. Like, is it the worst thing in the world to have, I don't know, Gavin Floyd making a couple of starts for you during the regular season if he's having a nice year in AAA? Probably not. What about Scott Diamond? He's not old, and he's had more than a cup of coffee in the major leagues. I don't know what Brad Penny is at this point, and Wade LeBlanc is, like, throwing underhand from the left side. Chad Jenkins has always kind of intrigued me as well as a starter, Mike, because when they drafted him, I know the projections were, like, at best a third starter, and we've seen him in a relief role with the Blue Jays and at times be successful. Sinker ball guy. I'd be interested to see what he could do as maybe a back-end rotation starter as well.
Well, he's out of options, so I think he may be on the big club traded or waived if he doesn't make it. So don't forget Drew Hutchison, too. He's going to be in that Buffalo rotation, right? So and he will be the first guy you would think that the Blue Jays call if anything happens to anybody. So, you know, you've got all those guys you mentioned. They're not all going to be able to start for Buffalo, which is amazing when you consider that the last time I was here, about 10 minutes away from where I am right now at the GM meetings in November, Drew Hutchison was a Blue Jays third starter. Now he's their seventh starter, and they've got a bunch of ex big leaguers who are ready to go if the need arises. So they've really done a nice job of fixing their biggest weakness going into this season.
Kevin Pillar was at the State of the French Fries as well last week, Mike. He was cursing your name. You guys get into it on Twitter, or you did once. He wasn't. He didn't mention you.
No, we didn't. We had a conversation.
I know.
Nobody got into anything.
People got into it with you and with him.
Yeah, people wanted to look good in front of him.
So right.
They thought, that was kind of funny.
Yeah, it's comical. But he's beating he wants to lead off drum again. He mentioned it. He's led off in the minor leagues. That's true. And I asked him.
Why wouldn't you want to lead off?
Of course.
Who wouldn't want to lead off?
Of course. But there's that. And he said, I'd be a nice leadoff man for this team. And I asked him specifically a follow-up question about, well, do you think your approach has changed? Have you found something as far as getting on base? And I even said explicitly walks. Like, is that something you're working on? And then he did the thing, which is kind of scary, because we heard the same thing from JP Arencibia that, you know, walks are overrated, and like how many balls do you think they're gonna throw me when Josh Donaldson's hitting behind me, which is, you know, true, but not, because walking is a skill. There are still there are borderline pitches that some players are able to take for balls, and they end up on base via walk more so than others. And it doesn't matter who's hitting behind them. Sure, you'll get maybe once or twice, or I don't know, 10 times a season, you'll get a 3-1 fastball that's a meatball because you're hitting in front of Josh Donaldson than when you were hitting eighth or seventh. But generally, that's not the case. Lineup construction does not a good on-base man make.
No, I read those quotes from Pillar, and they were really, really frightening.
Yeah,
the last thing you want to hear from your leadoff man is walks really aren't a concern, because I'm going to get so many good pitches to hitting in front of Donaldson that I'm going to be on base all the time anyway. And if he hits 300 with the 315 on base, he's going to think he's on base all the time because he's hitting 300. But that's a terrible, terrible leadoff man. And, you know, as far as that lineup argument you made, Jose Bautista's hit in front of Edwin Encarnacion each of the last 4 years, and Edwin's hit, 30-plus home runs each of the last 4 years, and Bautista's walked 100 times.
Yeah.
You know, who wants to walk Jose Bautista when you have to deal with Edwin Encarnacion? Well, Josh Donaldson took some walks hitting in front of Jose Bautista last year. You know, I don't know that walking is a skill, but being a disciplined hitter is a skill.
Yeah.
And so far, Kevin Pillar has not been that in the major leagues. And, you know, to suggest that because he hits for a high average and steals bases, the very high rate of success, that he should be a leadoff man, well, the truth of the matter is he doesn't get on base enough, and walking is part of getting on base enough. It's hard to get hits in the major leagues. That's why they say if you know, 3 out of 10, you're a Hall of Famer. But getting on base, 4 out of 10 is certainly possible when you're great at getting those extra times where, you know, like the whole Tim Raines, Tony Gwynn argument, right?
Yeah.
Tony Gwynn was the greatest pure hitter of all time, or one of them, won 7 batting titles, hit .337. Tim Raines had the same on-base percentage as him.
Yep.
Didn't hit .300. And Tim Raines was fantastic at getting on base. Much better than Tony Gwynn was when he wasn't getting hits. And for the 50-point batting average difference, they were the same guy as far as not getting out. So, in fact, Raines got out less than Gwynn did over his career. Or reach base more often, one or the other. I think it's reach base more often. The thing is, if you're going to lead off, especially with an offense like this, you got to be able to not get out.
Yeah.
And Kevin Pillar's not good at not getting out yet.
Yeah.
He may develop that skill. You know, he's always been a great hitter in the minor leagues. He walked some in the minor leagues. He's had some times where his walk rate's gone up. But it's not sexy, and it's not flashy, and very rarely do you get a cheer. But it's really, really, really important to walk if you're going to be at the top of the lineup.
Yeah.
Kevin Pillar does not do that.
Doesn't it strike you as odd that that's a response you get quite often? And I mentioned JP Arencibia. I mean, he would talk about how overrated walks were all the time. guy's not in the major leagues anymore, but that someone's not in their ear telling them, and especially in this era of baseball where we know so much more about, yes, okay, we get it, you're a great hitter, and you're one of the best in the world at putting that bat on the ball going 90-plus miles an hour, and that's an incredible skill. But you realize how incredibly difficult it is to do consistently, and if you can give yourself any chance to get on base where you don't have to make contact with the ball, like that's what you should also add to your offensive arsenal. I almost feel like that conversation has never happened at any level with these guys, and like I'm not gonna tell Kevin Pillar how to do his job, certainly, but that's almost a philosophy that's lost on those guys is kind of surprising.
I had that conversation with JP and CBN, and he answered it the same way. You know, it doesn't matter if I hit 20 home runs, I don't have to walk. It doesn't matter if I hit 220, if I hit 20 home runs.
Yeah,
some people.
But then
know,
that happened, and then he's not in the major leagues anymore.
Right, but you know what? I'm gonna give a shameless plug right now for Shai Davidi's book, and it's coming out in May, I think, of the top 50. Greatest Blue Jay whatever's moments and people and things. It's a fantastic book. I'm in the process of proofreading it for him right now.
Mm-hmm.
And in that book, there is the details of a conversation between Alex Anthopoulos and Edwin Encarnacion when Edwin was struggling. And Alex came up to him at the All-Star break and said, look, last year at the All-Star break, you had walked... Or last year you walked 65 times and you had this great year. This year you're struggling. It's the All-Star break. You have 9 walks. That has to change. And Edwin said, you know what? He thought about it, and he realized, yeah, that's what the problem was. He was swinging at too many bad pitches, and he was out of his approach. And he wasn't getting on base enough. And since then, he's been just a monster.
Yeah. He's like one of the best in the major leagues at only swinging and making contact and not striking out.
He's a guy who, for a power hitter, for a guy who can hit 40 home runs, walks as often as he strikes out. That's unbelievable.
Why didn't Alex have that conversation with, like, J.P. Arencibia or anybody else? Like, why?
I don't know. Ask Alex.
I just don't get it, Mike. And, like, I'm not smarter than Kevin Pillar.
Look, that's the thing. Some people are willing to listen and some people aren't. And let's not forget, too, that a lot of people have had this stuff pounded into their heads since they were 6 years old, right? Remember when the Blue Jays became a thing and people started paying attention to them in 83, 84, 85 with Domaso Garcia and Tony Fernandez and George Bell, and the whole thing was you can't walk off the island.
Yeah.
You know, we could care less about our on-base percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And they're winning pennants with Domaso Garcia leading off with a .302 on base.
Yeah.
So, or at least winning division titles. So, you know, that's been a thing for a long, long, long time. And there are some things that it's going to take a long time to beat out of people, and for some players, that's one of them.
Kevin Pillar seems like he's receptive, though, less defiant than J.P. Arencibia was, because J.P. was, like, quite frankly, he was defiant about people who questioned his inability to take a walk. And even,
well, only I think because he heard about it so much.
Well, you know, and it was such a it was such a huge part of the story of J.P. Arencibia, Mike, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a huge...
But it wasn't just that he couldn't take a walk. I mean, he hit .210, too.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that.
Well, and, I mean, his first full season in the major leagues, though, was acceptable because the slugging percentage was so ridiculous, right?
Right.
He hit .219 with a .282 on base, but he slugged .438 for an OPS of .720, did J.P. Arencibia.
And that made him think that as long as I'm hitting home runs, I'm doing fine.
Right, but yeah, you got to keep the batting average above the Mendoza line. And when it started dipping below it and people realized how easy it was to get him outside of the zone, things changed. And I thought, Mike, that I would have, when I asked that question to Kevin Pillar, I thought for sure I was going to get an answer. Yeah, you know what? That's part of being in the major leagues and learning how to stay here and learning what makes Jose Bautista so great is understanding the strike zone and understanding only to swing at strikes or get as close to that as possible. I was surprised because I thought I did see that at times with him learning to lay off pitches. And of course, nobody wants to swing at sliders a foot off the edge of the plate, which is what we saw a lot from Kevin Pillar when he first arrived at the major leagues. But I thought I was seeing the progression of Kevin Pillar from a plate approach standpoint. So I was kind of surprised to hear him say that.
Yeah, I am too, and it's too bad. But hopefully, you know, by the time we have a conversation in spring training, that will change. And he'll, you know, maybe all that has to happen is he has to talk to Jose Bautista, or Jose Bautista has to talk to him and say, look, you know, look at the value of swinging at strikes and not swinging at not strikes.
He could
and,
be
you
a
know, getting yourself into good counts and getting on base.
He could be a 300 hitter, though, Mike. I don't rule that out because he had a real dip at the beginning of the last season. He still hit 278 or whatever. Like, he almost hit 280 in the major leagues over the course of an entire season, playing just about every day. So if he's a 300 hitter in the major leagues and an on-base guy of 350, that is a leadoff guy.
It is in 2016, yeah. But that's 50 points of on-base is something I don't think he's managed to do. What do you have, a 35, an isolated on base of about 35 last year?
Yeah, 278 with an on base of 314 last year.
Ooh, 34. All right. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be better than that.
36.
Yeah, 36. It's got to be better than that. And hopefully it can get there because if he could get on base more, he would be an excellent leadoff man. Although I don't know that there's anybody you can't say that about.
That's true. That's a good point too. But the guy can put the bat on the ball. He is an excellent hitter, and if he does what he did second half of the season, because he was,
he was terrible for 3 weeks in August.
Okay,
but
yeah.
Just like he was terrible at the beginning for a while, and he was terrible for 3 weeks in August. You take those two, and you can't. But if you take those two extended slumps out, he definitely hit 300 and probably a little bit better.
Yeah, he was real good all season long. Better than I ever thought he would be, honestly, to hit 278 in the major leagues. I was impressed, and the defense obviously plays. Doesn't matter what his on base is. If you're hitting 278 and playing that defense, he's a major leaguer for sure, Mike.
Right, absolutely. Hitting in one of the bottom three spots of the lineup.
Yep.
Actually, it didn't surprise me because I won a bet with one of our
producers. Oh, yeah, that's right, J.D. Bunkus. It's all right. That's he lost right. a big bet when we played poker the other day, so I guess he's even. All right, Michael, thank you for this. No more vacations planned, right? You're done?
The next time I get on an airplane after I get home will be to go to spring training, which is about as far from a vacation as you can get.
Okay. It'll be warm, though, at least. All right, thank you, Michael.
All righty.